Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, June 30th, 2017. Renewed fighting in Morobo County leaves a number of people killed and injured despite a recently signed peace agreement.
When they got to our base,
our forces were already alert and they had already moved out from the place. You are not supposed to be looking for troops, but you are supposed to be looking for the talk of national dialogue. But now, if the national dialogue is not bringing fruits, so what is the use?
And citing security concerns, the South Sudan government says it may withhold permission for aid workers seeking delivery assistance to some rebel-controlled areas.
We allow the access to anywhere, provided that it is an area controlled by the SPLA. Otherwise, we cannot guarantee the safety of humanitarian agencies when they go to areas where the pockets of rebellions are operating.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The recent controversial peace agreement signed between the Yei River State authorities and a breakaway faction of the SPLA-IO appears to have fallen apart. Residents and eyewitnesses say renewed fighting broke out in Yei River State's Morobo County on Thursday. An eyewitness says up to 20 people, including both soldiers and civilians, were killed. However, the number of people killed or injured has not yet been specified. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
An eyewitness says the fighting occurred in Morobo County's Yondu area, some 5 miles from Kimba, where government forces are based. Speaking on condition of anonymity because of the fear of government reaction, one eyewitness who survived the fighting says he counted up to 20 dead bodies, including both soldiers and civilians who died during the fighting. The SPLA-IO deputy military spokesman, Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel, alleges the fighting broke out when government forces went to Yondu to mobilize 16,000 troops loyal to Hillary Yakani Edison, the leader of a breakaway faction of the SPLA-IO who signed an agreement with the government recently in Kampala. Gabriel claims government forces found that the SPLA-IO forces in Yondu village are not loyal to Yakani. He says the government and SPLA-IO forces then exchanged gunfire, leaving 4 civilians dead and 2 women wounded. He says the dead include a church leader and his son. He says the wounded civilians are being treated at Yondu Primary Health Care Unit. Due to the poor quality of the telephone line from Kampala, we will voice over Lam's comments.
When they got to our base, our forces were already alert and they had already moved out from the place. You are not supposed to be looking for troops, but you are supposed to be looking for the talk of national dialogue. But now, if the national dialogue is not bringing fruits, so what is the use?
The deputy military spokesman for South Sudan Army, Colonel Santo Domich, says he has no knowledge of the fighting in Yei River State. The Morobo County Commissioner, Richard Remo Soro, who resides in Kaya Town at the South Sudan-Uganda border, confirms there was fighting in Yondu on Thursday. He says the SPLA commander in the area told him that an unknown number of people were killed during the fighting. Commissioner Soro says he was informed that all the dead are rebel fighters.
I'm the commissioner.
I have to rely on the report from the commander who is commanding the troops. According to the commander, Isaiah was not killed. These are rebels. The commander never told me the number killed.
The Yei River State Governor David Lokonga Moses admits that there are rebel forces operating in parts of Morobo County, including in Yondu, where fighting broke out Thursday. Lokonga calls the rebels anti-peace elements. He accuses the rebels of violating the ceasefire President Kiir declared earlier. He says he knows those causing insecurity in his state.
I have identified some names, you know. One of those is called Alson Sebit. He is calling himself a brigadier. And the other one is called Simon Asiki. And these people, they are loyal to Riek Machar, and they are the people who continue attacking the positions of the SPLA, especially in Morobo, in the area I mentioned. And when you come to Yondu's incident, which I am not clearly given the details of what has happened, definitely this is the area where they are operating. And indeed, if something happened, maybe innocent civilian may die. The SPLA always are responding when attacked.
Lokonga says the government wants to resolve the ongoing conflict peacefully through the national dialogue, but he warns that government forces will not tolerate attacks by rebels.
And for me, I wanted to condemn in a strongest term that these attacks, what they are doing, these anti-peace elements, their commanders who are in Yei, who are receiving number of those who are returning from the bush coming for the dialogue, and those in Kaya, they have information. They say these are the people who are actually creating insecurity.
This is the second time government and rebel forces are fighting in the area in the past 2 months, according to residents. 5 soldiers were killed near Yondu when government and rebel forces clashed last month. Lokonga says unless rebel fighters stop attacking government forces, he expects more clashes between the warring parties in Yei River State. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
The South Sudan government says it may withhold permission for aid workers from delivering assistance to some areas controlled by the rebels if such areas are not secure. In a report released on Wednesday, the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or UNOCHA, says aid workers have been barred from accessing some areas in the Equatorial region. For VOA News, Michael Atit files this report from Juba.
In its latest monthly report issued on Wednesday this week, OCHA says humanitarian organizations continue to face challenges accessing key locations affected by insecurity in the greater Equatorial region. The report says since early May, aid workers have not been able to deliver aid to families at Liwolo camps in former Central Equatorial State, where more than 30,000 internally displaced people are sheltering. OCHA says areas outside Torit, the capital of Imotong State, remain inaccessible to humanitarian organizations due to increasing insecurity. In the former Western Equatoria, OCHA says the government has denied access to humanitarian organizations in May to deliver aid to at least 11,000 IDPs sheltering south of Mundri town, including Kotobi and Bangolo. President Kiir's spokesman Ateny Wek Ateny admits the government cannot allow aid workers to go to the rebel-controlled areas. He says the government forces often have to escort humanitarian workers. He says the government can only guarantee safety of aid workers operating in government-controlled areas. He says humanitarian organizations have to take precautions when accessing areas he calls insecure.
We are determined to also protect the humanitarian, you know, workers, not to run into wrong place at wrong time. You know, this is what we wanted the humanitarian agencies to understand. We allow the access to anywhere, provided that it is an area controlled by the SPLA. Because if it is under the SPLA control, then the humanitarian workers will be saved. Otherwise, we cannot guarantee the safety of humanitarian agencies when they go to areas where the pockets of rebellions are operating.
Ateny says several humanitarian convoys were attacked in the past month in areas of the country under rebel control. He did not name areas where the incident occurred. Ateny insists the government has the right to provide security and ensure the safety of the aid workers in the country.
We don't want any humanitarian worker to run into unwanted situation. When they ask us, as they have access to everywhere, we will tell them exactly what to expect in the areas they wanted to access. Because there are areas that have seen brutal pockets, you know, members of the pockets of those rebellions, you know, maiming, killing, even the civilian.
The presidential spokesman says the government is aware that operating in rebel-controlled area is tough despite the needs of the civilians living in those areas. Ateny says he believes many South Sudanese are growing their own food and there will be no hunger in South Sudan in the next few months.
We are thinking within the August, between July and August, the food insecurity will drop significantly. It has now dropped to almost 50%, but it will come down to almost 20 or 15%. As you go to October, you know, South Sudan will be food secure.
OCHA says aid agencies are continuing to explore all options to get urgently needed supplies to the Liwolo IDP camps, located about 40 kilometers southwest Wudu town in the former Kajukeji County. The UN body says it will continue with the high-level engagement and advocacy with authorities in Juba to allow aid to reach families in desperate need. President Kiir has on several occasions ordered South Sudan Army to allow humanitarian workers to access areas hard hit by food insecurity. International and local aid workers say the presidential orders are yet to be respected. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
The International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies warns that the humanitarian situation in South Sudan remains catastrophic, even though the country is no longer classified as being in a state of famine. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Red Cross headquarters in Geneva.
The South Sudanese government and the United Nations declared on June 21st that the famine that had struck parts of Unity State is over. The International Red Cross Federation warns, however, against complacency. The head of the agency's office in South Sudan, Michael Charles, says the situation remains precarious, although famine conditions are no longer present.
We have over 1.7 million people that are at the brink of famine. And really, you know, the lifting of the famine vis-a-vis the emergency phase of food insecurity is very blurry in the eyes of the people that are affected. So whether famine has been lifted technically, but the people haven't really noticed the difference because they still don't have access to food, because the children are still malnourished, because, you know, diseases are still ongoing.
Charles says the humanitarian situation in South Sudan remains dire. South Sudan's famine may be technically over, but he says more than 6 million people across the country are short of food and going hungry. He says 1 million children are acutely malnourished. The Red Cross official says hunger weakens people's ability to fight off disease. He says preventable, treatable diseases such as measles, cholera, and malaria are on the increase and are a potential death sentence for children who are malnourished. Charles says efforts by aid agencies have managed to lift South Sudan out of famine, but he warns that another man-made disaster brought on by conflict could occur if peace efforts make no progress. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Find out what one activist is doing to improve the learning environment in some of South Sudan's schools. Stay tuned.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how does your community express its hospitality?
My community, because I'm from Eastern Equatoria, and my tribe is Peri tribe. For example, once a visitor comes at home, and if a female is there, she has to greet and kneels down. She has to bring water.
When the person moves in the community, we all go and we go and visit the person and get to find out more about the person and welcoming the person to the community.
I think they watch out for people. When you move in newly in the area, people come and say hello.
In my community, they express hospitality in terms of receiving guests, treating them good, providing them an accommodation, shelter, food and drinks.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Food insecurity and malnutrition affect hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese due to ongoing fighting, spiraling prices and drought. But small organizations are finding unique ways to help. In the final installment of our series on making a difference in South Sudan, Carol Van Dam reports on what an organization called GEMS Development Foundation is doing to help the mentally ill.
Ellen Ratner is a U.S. political journalist and radio personality who first visited Southern Sudan in 2006, before it won its independence from Sudan in 2011. She says she has been back about 20 times since then because she loves the people of South Sudan and wants to help alleviate hunger and stimulate local economies in Juba, Awil, and Wau. These days, her trips are focused around her aid organization called Goats for the Old Goat, which she founded in 2011, and when she turned 60, or in her words, into an old goat. That same year, Ratner and her brother Bruce Ratner helped bring a former child slave who was blinded by his captors to the United States for treatment from South Sudan. Ratner, who worked in the health industry for years before becoming a journalist, says many South Sudanese suffer from post-traumatic stress or deep psychiatric problems that are rarely treated in the country's healthcare facilities. She says that's where Goats for the Old Goat and its sister nonprofit called GEMS comes into play.
One, we take patients off the street. Two, we are training the psychologist to do a psychiatric day treatment program. Once they get that going at Juba Teaching Hospital, Ward 11, then one of the things that can happen is that other people from around the country can come in and learn from them.
Ratner has also set up a program in Juba to help psychiatric patients that's divided into two categories.
And make half of it addictions and half of it mental health, pure mental health. I am bringing former president, I believe he was former president of American Society of Addiction Medicine, Dr. Mel Pohl, to South Sudan to do a two-day workshop so he can teach both the medical students and other people.
Ratner says another important aspect of her project is to educate South Sudanese about the Holocaust. More than 6 million Jews were murdered under the German Nazi regime between 1941 and 1945. Ratner says South Sudanese should be taught about the Holocaust so history does not repeat itself. Most South Sudanese of a certain age were never taught what happened in the Holocaust in the Sudanese curriculum. Ratner says she once quizzed their medical students about the Holocaust.
Do you know who Hitler is? One of them said, yeah, he was from Germany. I'm going, yes. Well, guess what? They said, wasn't he a missionary here? So we really need to do some education, and that's why the Facing History course in South Sudan is so important.
Hundreds of thousands of people have been killed in South Sudan since the fighting began in late 2013. In March, a United Nations report described South Sudan as teetering on the edge of genocide and experiencing ethnic cleansing. UN officials say the UN Commission on Human Rights into South Sudan is the most comprehensive report so far into ethnic cleansing and conditions that might lead to genocide. It includes details on deliberate starvation and bombardment of civilians. That is why Ratner believes the South Sudanese need help now.
The good people of South Sudan, and I have to tell you, they are wonderful human beings. The people, the good people of South Sudan are really trying. They try to get up every morning. They try and do their best to raise their children. And I just think any help Americans can give to people in South Sudan, the better it is.
So far, Goats for the Old Goat has given out more than 10,000 goats to different South Sudanese families across the country. They take in 8 to 12 mentally ill patients a month off the streets of Juba, Awil, and Wau and provide them with psychiatric care. Ratner's foundation is also starting a virtual Holocaust museum for the people of South Sudan so the world can see what took place without having to go to South Sudan in person. Carol Van Dam for VOA News, Washington.
The European Union is donating 20 million euros to pay incentives to primary school teachers in South Sudan. The donation aims to encourage teachers to continue with work during the country's economic crisis, which has delayed salary payments by the government. South Sudan's Minister of General Education and Instruction, Deng Deng Hodge, says 16,000 teachers in over 1,000 primary schools will receive $40 per month, starting at the end of June. Nabil Biagio has more from Juba.
The program is expected to last for the next 18 months and will benefit 30,000 teachers in 3,000 government-owned primary schools around the country. Teachers are welcoming the EU's decision to come to their rescue. Said Jabalon Ziada is a teacher at Juba One Girls Primary School. He says it has been more than 4 months since he received his last salary. He says he does his work on an empty stomach every day.
We are facing starvation, suffering, going footing from our residence up to the school, returning back. We are exhausted in this condition. We need help. We need help from both sides, government and the organization who offer to us this money. Let them make pressure to make us to get money quickly.
A primary school teacher receives on average a monthly salary of between 1,500 and 3,500 South Sudanese pounds, which is the equivalent of $20. The EU incentive of $40 is three times the average salary of a primary school teacher in South Sudan. Deputy head teacher at Jubawan Girls Primary School, says the quality of education is deteriorating in South Sudan because of the low wages teachers receive and the constant delays in paying salaries. Sosen Mabrouk says the morale of the teachers is very low.
The schools are not functioning as they are to function. So the delayment of salaries really affects our work. So at this time, we really welcome those people who want to assist us so that we are able to do our work effectively. So if the payment can start today, we will be happy, and then we will make sure that the second term will be successful, and also the final, which is the third term, will also be successful.
Mabrouk says the teacher incentives provided by the EU will partially improve the living conditions of teachers in the country. Alfred Dominic is another teacher who says he doubts the government will use the money donated by the European Union to pay teacher incentives. Dominic says he will believe it once he has the money in his pocket.
This is not for the first time that the government has promised such kind of things. When I receive them, this one, I will believe that the grant has reached us really. And instead, this $40 is nothing compared to the present economic situation.
Dominic also says he would prefer to receive the $40 paid in hard currency so that he can get a favorable exchange rate at the black market instead of the lower government-sanctioned bank rate. South Sudan's Minister of General Education and Instruction, Deng Deng Hock, says his ministry has made arrangements with the EU-funded impact program to disperse the money to beneficiary schools this week.
By funding incentives for primary school teachers in South Sudan, IMPACT would provide critical support to the education system, enabling teachers to continue to teach and schools to continue to function. IMPACT is looking forward to have more schools being approved in the coming months.
Hawk says schools that have provided the attendance sheets verified the number of their teachers and students will be the first to receive the EU incentives.
Incentives can only be released to schools where there is sufficient assurance that the school is operational and that teachers receiving the money are teaching regularly in school. There are more than 3,000 schools in South Sudan with pupils enrolled this year, and the committee urged other schools to push ahead to meet the requirements so that their teachers can receive this support.
The minister says the money will be wired to the bank accounts of the schools that have met the requirements of his ministry. Hawk says schools in remote areas without bank accounts will have their share of money delivered directly to the school and handed over to teachers in front of a committee comprised of the head teacher and school governing body representatives. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
Yesterday, we spoke to Akuja Madingde Gareng, a South Sudanese who was given the prestigious Member of the British Empire honor from the Queen of England for her work in encouraging girls to stay in school. Akuja said advocating for girls' education is not easy, and operating in South Sudan requires a level of cooperation with government officials and host communities. In the second part of her interview with South Sudan in Focus host John Tanza, Akuja says the depreciating value of the South Sudan pound has affected her program.
If the program was going to be sustainable, it has to be, first of all, embedded in what the needs are of people, but also in line with what the policy of the country is.
Talking about sending girls or boys to school is a good thing, but you have a country where the education system is facing a lot of challenges. For instance, there are areas where the children have no buildings. They are taught under the trees. How does that impact on your program?
One of the things that we are doing to improve the environment of learning is to provide grants to schools. So if, for example, a school today is under a tree, or maybe a school has one classroom, we are providing them with a grant to be able to build classrooms. So first of all, schools are actually required to meet of criteria. One of the criteria, of course, has to do with the plan. What do you plan to do as a community for your school? And once that plan is clear, then they are offered the opportunity to access the grants. And with those grants, they can do what they need to do. And that includes building classrooms or actually building a whole school altogether.
Do you have programs that are geared towards teachers? Because a lot of programs in South Sudan only talk about students, talk about improving the infrastructure for easy learning, but the issue of teachers is not always talked about. For instance, most teachers are not paid well, and that is not a motivation for encouraging students to go to school. If the teachers are not motivated, then the students will not learn a lot.
Absolutely correct. So without the teachers, there's really nothing we can do. So there will not be any teaching happening. So one of the things that we did last year was that within the grants that we are providing to the schools, we have made an allowance for schools to use some of that for teachers' incentives. Of course, we cannot replace the salaries. We cannot replace the government. The provision of salaries is the role of the government. However, we have to kind of, you know, accept the reality of the country that, first of all, the value of the SSP has completely basically gone downhill, as you know. So what teachers are getting is not enough. And even if they get it, it comes maybe 3 months late. So what we did is that we made a special allowance for the grant to be used for incentives of teachers, just the whole of last year. And subsequently, this year, we have been lucky that we managed through lobbying with other donors to get a grant that will be specifically addressed at teachers' incentives.
You have been given an encouraging award to continue doing this work. And South Sudan is a huge country with huge challenges, with a lot of needs. How are you going to sustain this program? What motivates you to continue?
We've been running for 4 years now, and that's been a good sign. And as I said, I think the fact that we are embedded in the communities and we understand what their needs are, the fact that we are working across the whole country and treating everybody equally, that's been a good sort of support and boost to the program. The fact that we also work hand in hand with the authorities that are there in South Sudan has helped us. To the extent that actually the government of South Sudan had actually decided to take up part of the responsibility that they will pay the grant for primary school, for example, because they were so convinced that this program is working very well that they would like to budget for that in their government budget for education. And that is actually the case still for this coming financial year. Yeah, so we are really hoping that the government will take up the responsibility of providing the grants to schools. And eventually, in the next year, we are looking to lobby with them to take up the cash transfers that are going to the girls specifically.
That was Akuja Madingde Gareng, recipient of the prestigious Member of the British Empire honor given by the Queen of England. Akuja is also team leader for Girls Education South Sudan, or GESS, a program that aims to transform lives of children, especially girls, through education. GESS is an initiative of the Ministry of General Education and Instruction, with funding support from UKAID. She spoke with John Tanza from London. And that's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Africa Unite by Bob Marley and the Wailers.
Africa Unite, because we're moving right out of Babylon. How good and how pleasant it would be before God and man, yeah, to see the unification of all Africans, yeah. Has it been said already? Let it be done, yeah. We are the children of the Rastaman.
We've been listening to Bob Marley and the Wailers with the song Africa Unite. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thanks for listening. We hope you have a peaceful weekend. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.